This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 20th of May, 2021. And boy, a bit of trauma, to say the least, in the across markets yesterday, driven, of course, by the back and forth in the crypto space, where it was very broad-based, and it wasn't just Bitcoin this time around. It was very much out in Ether and the other smaller coins as well, where there's even more volatility in percentage terms. We'll get to that in a moment, but things sort of shaking out, and for the broader market, more or less back to unchanged, whether we look at equities or treasuries. And just at the top of the program, I wanted to remind myself, we don't do this very often, but we're a growing podcast. It's great to see the engagement out there. We'd like you to leave, if you can, and take the time, just take a couple minutes on whatever podcast service you're using. Apple Podcasts is especially helpful because it's the most popular podcast app. Leave a review, hopefully a very positive one, and that helps us out in terms of spreading the word and gaining a wider audience. So please, if you haven't done so already, take the time to do so, and we really appreciate that. And also today, we just a little promo here for your webinar. You've got one coming up today with plenty going on in the commodity space. What's your focus?
Oh boy, yeah, where to start? I will obviously still be focusing on the main reasons why we are seeing this phenomenal run up in commodities, not only in industrial metals and energy, but also agriculture. We'll take a look at sustainability of some of those movements. And then we'll just dig a little bit deeper into latest developments in some of the major commodities, gold, silver, crude oil, copper, and pick a few of the agriculturals. But as you say, there's plenty of stuff going on. So we'll just try to give a helicopter view of what's happening here and what may happen next.
And interestingly, before we get into the day-to-day action, we also had yesterday the China out. There was a report on a CCTV report about the Chinese cabinet moving against these commodity price rises, and sort of, you know, mostly it's rhetorical gesturing, I guess, that they're going to do something to curb price rises. At least I always look at iron ore futures overnight because as an input for the Australian dollar, but it seems to be having somewhat of an effect. And there was this interesting comment they wanted to prevent price rises from feeding through to end consumers. It's like, well, who's going to eat that? change if there's the demand side is requiring these prices go up, who's going to eat the loss?
Yeah, well, someone's going to get squeezed there in the middle. So we got that on the slide a little bit later. But for those of you who are not watching the slide decks, so just to say that you can sign up by go to analysis.saxo. That's our analysis page. It's actually webinars.saxo, and it kicks off at 1 o'clock CET this afternoon.
Oh, for your webinar, yes, of course, webinars.saxo for that. All right, let's look at what happened yesterday in the equity space. Dragged down clearly sentiment wise by this all the calamity in crypto. And deleveraging there, we went in the NASDAQ 100 back towards that really critical area. You can see on slide three, the 12,900 plus area, that is the 61.8% retracement and almost the exact low to the point of that prior sell-off. So just underlining, that is the area for avoiding a further bearish potential to the downside. Or the next area coming in is actually, I think the 200-day moving average, if I'm not mistaken, is creeping in above that prior low at 12,200, but that's the next big area. So watch that on that, on the S&P 500, the 40 pivot low is the focus. Peter, anything you want to pull out of yesterday's session besides just the general everybody running for cover, and then there was a huge bounce in crypto and it all came back, or was there a bit more of interest in the internals?
Well, I would say we sort of alluded a little bit to it, John, in yesterday's podcast, you and me, to what extent a sharper sell-off or correction in cryptocurrencies could have spillover effects into other asset classes. And I for a moment, I'll let Ole talk about that, but for a moment, it looked like intraday that certainly gold were having a party while crypto was really almost falling off a cliff. And across equities, you know, especially the technology parts of the market was really weak. You also had the ECB comment out yesterday that they're seeing exuberance in markets, and I found that pretty funny, because it's, if there's any overvaluation and exuberance, it's definitely in European bonds where yields are so negative that you can never have a return. So, and the low returns also driving, sorry, the low yields also driving pretty aggressive behavior in equities, because you know when the discount is close to zero, you're almost willing to pay anything just to have an asset that can give you maybe just a slight return over bonds. So I found that pretty amusing. But so to me, there was some spillover effects, but it could have been more dramatic, and the market have recovered. But if we look at slide five, not a big surprise. The big losses yesterday came in our crypto and blockchain theme basket. Very ugly there. And I have put in the Coinbase share price. I mean, they just recently IPO'd. It happened to be so. And I think Blackstone was a good indicator in the back in the old days, 2007, I think, on the private equity. On private equity, that sometimes these IPOs, they mark sort of at least a local high for their asset class or industry, if you will, and it looks like that as well for Coinbase this time around. I want to highlight as well the semiconductor index, steam basket, sorry, up 1%. Very strong performance there. And we'll talk a little bit more about semiconductors when we talk Cisco earnings. And we had that conversation yesterday, John, that you know there's still a lot of bottlenecks and rising prices on semiconductors. So this industry is really having some great days, but it's a pain for everyone else.
Yeah, we talked about the car production yesterday, and just seeing a news item that the Ford F-150, America's best-selling car for the last, I don't know how many decades, they're having to halt production of the best-selling truck in America when the country's emerging from a pandemic. It's just an unbelievable story. Let's get to also the a key thing that was going on yesterday was the FOMC minutes and the reaction to that, which felt a little bit exaggerated. I've got some perspective here on slide four. So we saw treasuries quite a bit early in the day, again, on crypto chaos, saw a bit into safe havens. And among those, reflexively, was the treasury market. But if we look at some of the headlines that were, you know, touting that there was taper talk in the minutes, quite a bit exaggerated compared to the actual short phrase that was uttered or written in these minutes. I pulled a tweet from this Guy Lebas, if I'm saying his name correctly, where he points out the actual phrase: a number of participants suggested that if the economy continued to make rapid progress toward the committee's goals, it might be appropriate at some point in upcoming meetings to begin discussing a plan for adjusting the pace of asset purchases. I mean, this is about as non-committal and non-specific time-wise as possible, but nonetheless, you see sort of the reaction in the treasury market, and that is also has to be wrapped up into that we are tumbling lower because the crypto space stabilized. Net, end of the day, we're down about a tick relative to the prior day's low. So it's really not much worth writing home about. Nonetheless, the dollar firming a bit, and that's, I guess, the interesting outcome here.
And we actually just in recent weeks seen the Citi surprise index for U.S. economic data point lower. So we started to see some disappointment come in on the economic data compared to expectations. So maybe that is also a potential reason why it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, and it's so critical. I think the Fed is you know, to be fair to the Fed, they want to see how the data shapes up. And we were bemoaning this in our internal meeting this morning that it's just so difficult to have visibility. It feels like this is the case in a lot of markets right now. It's so hard to have visibility on the economy when we have all these disruption caused by the pandemic, and we need to see sort of things sort of settle out a bit for a few months before we can know what the lay of the land is. And that process is very difficult and just takes time. And time is something the market doesn't like to have to wait for. Let's get just briefly to the crypto space. We pulled out what was going on yesterday when I think in the podcast, it was well before the worst of the meltdown. And we were talking about the $29,000 area for Bitcoin. $30,000 did survive. That $29,000, by the way, that was the lows of the year back in January. And as well, it was the just above that was the target for the head and shoulders formation. So I would say effectively after yesterday's action, that target has been reached in the head and shoulders formation. What now? Well, it's all about where is the resistance? What do we have to overcome if we're supposed to be focusing back to the upside? And now we've established a downside pivot of 30,000. So the first key is obviously the 200-day moving average, which I pencil in conveniently right near the $40,000 level. But I think really to sort of suggest that this market is snapping back sooner rather than later to the upside, you need to get it back above that 61.8% retracement of this very ugly sell-off that took 50% of the price out of Bitcoin from top to bottom. That's around 48,000 and then arguably you could say 50,000 for the round level and that sloping old head and shoulders neckline. To my mind, just looking at this chart, it's going to take at least some time if this thing is going to stabilize and then get back to the upside. This is a very damaging rally, sell-off technically to the market. So it could take some time to work through this. By the way, a couple of figures we pulled out of a Bloomberg story quoting this bybt.com and just, you know, underlining for everyone out there the dangers of using leverage when you have a market that can move this much on a day-to-day basis, especially even those smaller coins, but Bitcoin itself demonstrating this as well. Trading in leverage in a market that moves this much is deadly. 775,000 accounts liquidated yesterday to the tune of about $8.6 billion of money in those accounts. I don't know at what point there was that much money in those accounts, but it just gives you an idea of the scale of the damage and why the price action got so vicious. When an exchange hosting an account is just simply forced to liquidate that account at any price, then it's difficult to find the bids in an illiquid and chaotic market to stabilize things. So, it's after the fact, but a reminder of the dangers, again, of trading with any degree of leverage in this market. And before we get back to you, Peter, on Cisco and otherwise, just a couple of notes. So we mentioned the commodity story in China. I'm just scratching my head at Aussie dollar's inability to sell off more. You've got that on slide 7. We have China actively trying to discourage people from and companies from importing their number one export, which is iron ore. There was a decent employment jobs report overnight, although it was a bit mixed. I've just rarely seen a currency pair that has struggled more with finding direction. So I'll be on the lookout for a breakdown below 76.75. Would likely require that we're probably running lower in some of these key commodities, which we already have done in the case of iron ore futures as well. So just a big head scratcher and waiting for something to give there and what will happen next. And also on that account, if you look at the FX board, the trend overview on slide 8, you can see the trends are getting weaker and weaker, whether it's down or uptrends in the various currencies, except for gold and silver, where we have the strongest reading. So it's gold versus fiat for the win. And the cable chart showing the difficulties with these breaks in sustaining immediate price action higher because we broke above that prior little high there, even tried to take out the 142 plus area, and now we're back a little bit. If this thing closes below 141, we're tactically back in limbo, although we haven't really sort of reversed properly unless we reverse back below 140. I think we need to see the European story continue to thrive and for those bond yields to recover from yesterday's hiccup and continue higher to help drive the dollar lower here. If we're not seeing that, we're seeing a weak risk sentiment. I think we get all bogged down again. Let's just finish off your space, Ole, because I just brought in the commodity story there. Is there anything you want to bring in as well on the Chinese news and especially gold, because it's doing the opposite of what the other metals prices are doing?
Yeah, indeed. We had a bit of a rare retreat in commodities yesterday. You can see that on slide 10. That's just showing the one-day performance. We had a couple of outliers, lumber for recovering after a massive sell-off recently, and we had carbon emission contracts down 6% because the UK and new UK system entered the market to sell some of their permits into the European system, so that put that market under pressure. But generally, you can see that we saw losses across the board, with gold really being the most noticeable exception. And you can see in terms of the chart, what it's doing right now, we're still hovering around that 1875 level, also at the high end of that channel that we've been in now since April. So I think a close above 1875 could indicate further upside with that 61.8% up at 1922. Just like you mentioned, Bitcoin in the high 40s, then that level is really the key for gold, where above which we could almost say that the correction is, or the sell-off is over. So that's a level to look out for there. But generally, the market's stumped by the general risk adversity yesterday, and particularly also if China is going to hit hard on speculation in commodities, because that could potentially have a significant impact. But overall, there's a super cycle. Whether or not that has calmed a bit remains to be seen. But some of the underlying fundamental reasons for holding commodities has not died with this correction yesterday.
All right. And then on the earnings front, Peter, of the different companies we've been covering this week, you're pulling out a focus on Cisco.
Yeah, I'm pulling out Cisco because they reported yesterday. And for those regular listeners of our podcast, I have been saying during the Q1 earnings season that, you know, company sales and earnings have come in much higher than estimates. Basically, analysts right now is too conservative. And a lot of companies across the board have raised both sales and earnings forecast for the entire year. And I was just been wondering whether, you know, companies, because they are as bad as everyone else in this industry to forecast longer term what's going to happen. So whether they're getting too confident in the, so they, whether they're actually getting tricked. So they, what they're seeing right now in terms of growth rate, they extrapolate for the entire year and they don't factor in, you know, continued commodity inflation for the rest of the year if that was to happen. And if it happens, then I've just been, you know, asking the question, what would we suddenly begin to see in the second half of the year earnings misses because companies had not anticipated the impact of these rising commodity inflation beyond the point that we already have. And Cisco yesterday alluded a little bit to this, saying that they're seeing increased component costs and they have customers that are scrambling to get networking equipment. And Cisco is in a position where they don't want to risk that other, you know, competitors are saying yes when they're saying no because they want to defend the bottom line. So what's happening is that they're paying a higher price to get components, but they're paying an even higher price in the short term here for logistics to get things shipped. So they're paying a premium price to deliver to their customers. So they're taking a short-term pain to their bottom line here. I'm putting it out here. It's just an early, maybe an indication. It could be extremely specific for Cisco and its industry, but I'm just flagging this again so people have it on their radar. And on slide 9, you can see some key bullets there from their earnings earnings release. And as you can see as well, they coming out with a pretty strong revenue forecast for this quarter, which is at least 2 percentage points above the current estimates. And then I've also put in a chart on the MSCI World's EBITDA margins. As you can see, they have recovered a little bit from the lows from the lows of the pandemic, but I wonder whether this rising commodity inflation could actually set in motion lower margins as we progress. We'll have to see.
Okay, and then today we have Applied Materials, among others, and you've highlighted Tencent for the focus today.
Yeah, that's simply because Tencent is the largest Chinese company by market value, and it's hugely important for sentiment in emerging market, the MSCI Emerging Markets Index, and it's just such a crucial point because we are a crucial company to watch because of the ongoing Chinese regulation. We have had one of the co-founders and one of the big crypto exchanges in China resigning overnight. Another sign maybe that China is clamping down on this industry. It could be fun to work somewhere else. Maybe that's the reason. I don't know. And you have this regulation on Tencent on how much you can do in gaming in China for young people. You have the crackdown on market power. They want to, Alibaba was forced to divest their media assets. They want to increase market competition in China. But for now, if you look at in slide 11 here, if you look at the forecast for revenue growth and operating profits, you can see that the analysts are still expecting that Tencent's money machine is unbroken and will just continue. So that, I think, stands a little bit at odds with what the Chinese government is trying to achieve here. And as we alluded to yesterday's podcast, John, George Soros, Cathie Wood, other very high-profile investors are really, increasing their stakes in Chinese technology companies. And finally, yesterday we had JD.com, very strong performance, basically just highlighting that the Chinese consumer rebound is ongoing and it's not slowing down, at least not from the viewpoint of JD.com.
All right. And as we round out the rest of the week on the macro calendar, a few things of interest today. So we have, first, I want to highlight the Fed's Kaplan. He's not a voter. He's the Dallas Fed president. He'll be out speaking later today. He's been one of the first to clamor a bit more loudly, or really at all, for a taper of asset purchases, quote, sooner rather than later. So if he's there's some kind of a Q&A that he's involved in today or panel. And if he mentions that he thinks that there are other sympathetic voices on the Fed in favor of that, that could be a market mover. Otherwise, it may be nothing. And then Bank of Canada would be another focus for currency traders, certainly with their financial system review out. Any look at the financial system in Canada has to focus on housing, which is multiples of the U.S. housing bubble in terms of its scale relative to the Canadian economy. But of course, with the lower rates, it's been allowed to go into a whole new phase here. I think it's a huge forward risk for the country, but interesting to see to what degree that gets highlighted and whether Macklem in the press conference a bit later feels that his message was underappreciated on the currency. Recently, he did mention the Canadian dollar recently, but I guess the wording wasn't strong enough to make that much of an impression. I think there's a risk there. Dollar Canada has recently touched near this huge 120 level. We've talked about it a bit on the podcast. I'm just a bit curious if we're at risk of further consolidation higher there, at least tactically. And then, of course, the weekly initial claims out of the U.S., where we saw another low print last week. We'll be looking for further progress on that front. And then the first services and manufacturing PMI, especially the services side, getting a bit more interesting as we look at that into tomorrow in Europe with those May flash releases. Although really it's the June, it's the summer period, and to what degree we're you know normalizing activity there. South Africa also out with an interest rate decision today. There's no time given and no movement expected there. But look out for, of course, any hints or guidance. That will be a wrap for today. Thanks for joining, and we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.